we're on our own. It's just regular people like us. It's moms and dads, and we don't have money behind us or anybody. It's really just us. We sell t-shirts so we can have picnics and stuff. Like, that's really, it's that, like, homemade. But it works.
It's grassroots, and I'm proud of that. Very proud. Yeah. This is grassroots.
It is.
So, and we're going to continue to win with the grassroots.
Hi, you're listening to We Are Reopen Bucks. In this series, we sit down with some of the key players in the reopen movement and discuss their experiences navigating the pandemic. Today, I'm catching up with Vanna DeArmond, a Central Bucks wife and mother who's played a key role in many parts of the Reopen Bucks story. A major part of her reopen story has been her transition from homeschooling her kids to putting them into school. Welcome, Vanna. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to start off with just understanding what exactly are the major timelines of your switching. I'm most curious, like, if we go all the way back to when COVID started, so early 2020, at that time, are you fully homeschooling your kids?
Not exactly. So At that time I had been homeschooling for 9 years, and I had a seventh grader who was ready to try public school. So we made a decision in January to put him in. And then I had two younger ones that I felt I wanted to have them in public school, because at that time I recognized that at least one of them really needed some of the special needs help that the public school offers. We have a great school district in Central Bucks, and I knew he would do better. I could not offer him what I felt he needed. So also in January, I put him into school, and then they had one left at home in kindergarten, and I continued to homeschool him with the intent to put him in, because now both of his brothers were in public school and he really wanted to try it. And I thought, okay, I need a break after 9 years of homeschooling. I was really needing a break from that. And then, of course, March 13th, I believe, was the date. They're back home. We're shut down. And I really was not happy about that.
Oh, the timing. Like, I can imagine that.
I mean, I had 2 months where I had just put them in, and things were going well, actually. And so now they're back home, and now I'm doing a combination of homeschooling and pandemic schooling, because what we're doing here is some sort of virtual learning, but it's worksheets, and you know, it really was not ideal. And that's not a criticism of teachers in the district or the district itself, because this was all brand new. But it was very difficult. I will say, though, that my son's reading specialist was amazing. We met over Zoom, and with the support and the experience that I had as a homeschooler, I was able to progress him. They'd had no learning loss. He had no learning loss. And I often tell people as well, when they reflect back on that time, they say how difficult it was. And I said, well, that was not homeschooling. People were working, trying to juggle their kids being at home, never having homeschooled before. I can't even imagine how hard that was for them. Because anyone who starts homeschooling, your first year or two, you're trying to figure out what works. You're trying to figure out what curriculum to use. You're just trying to figure out what the rhythm is going to look like. So just imagine now everybody's stuck at home and parents are trying to work and trying to take care of kids. And it was a tough time.
Very stressful. And for me, I'm an outsider to the whole homeschooling experience, but I feel like homeschooling has been very core to the Reopen Bucks experience, because so many Reopen Bucks members are homeschoolers. There were a lot of people who shifted to homeschooling because of COVID. And we recently had an episode, Julia Gerlach and Angie Dempsey, kind of covering that experience a little bit. And one aspect of that you alluded to in there is, you know, I think the ability with homeschooling to kind of access a lot of resources where it's, you can take them places, right? Because you're not confined to a school building all day.
Yes.
A lot of days are out at the co-op, or you're taking kind of like a field trip, or you're just picking all these things. Well, when COVID hits, I imagine you had a couple kids you just put in at that point. So you're probably trying to like revert back to what you know and are good at, which is like all the homeschooling you did for so many years. But you can't, because everything's like shut down. So what was the effect to you guys of just there not being anything, it all being shut down, in addition to the schools being closed?
That was really hard. And you really hit the nail on the head, because I think some people who maybe weren't familiar with homeschoolers didn't understand that we were rarely staying home every day. Homeschoolers did a lot out. We had co-ops. We had activities at the YMCA, for example. Lots of group meetups, lots of playground meetups, lots of socialization. So being stuck at home was disruptive to the kids and what they were used to. It was difficult for us as parents and just as a family to be, I mean, we're used to being together, but it's not ideal when you don't, you can't even really go outside. At least that, you know, for those first couple
weeks. I mean, the stress and anxiety was like through the roof.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
You're not only like stressing everybody out, but you're forcing them to be like inside together all the time. It's...
I'll never forget one game night that we tried to have that didn't go so well. And my husband and I looked at each other like, we're trying, but it's not exactly working out the way that we were, had hoped.
Yeah. Now, so they're, the two older kids are, you know, basically trying to do the virtual, trying to do what the school is coming up with for that end of that school year.
Yes.
At some point, you know, over the summer, it all goes haywire with going into the next school year. But what was your plan from there in terms of, you know, did you in spring of 2020 convert to saying, okay, we're just going to go back to homeschooling because of the way the world is? Or did you kind of keep them in that virtual component, hoping to send them back in the fall? Like, what was the plan?
Yeah, well, my plan was I had hoped that the schools would open normally. And when Dr. Damsker came out with his original guidance that it was just going to be masks on the bus and masks in the hallways, but then it was going to be normal, I felt that, okay, we can deal with that. And that I would be having my kids in public school in Central Bucks starting fall of 2020. But then that very quickly changed as Dr. Kopicki, the then superintendent, walked that back. And I mean, most of us know the story if we've listened to other of these podcasts. So at that point, once I realized what was going to happen, I immediately enrolled two of the three into cyber school, a cyber charter school. So that is, these schools are specialized in delivering an excellent education in the virtual format. I did not trust that Central Bucks would be able to deliver that well enough and to be consistent. And I knew my kids needed consistency. I had a feeling there was going to be that situation where, oh, one day we're virtual or one week we're virtual. Oh, we have too many cases or we, you know, now we're back to normal. Nope, now we're back to the flip-flopping, right? We got too many cases, we got to go back. So I didn't want that flip-flopping. I wanted my kids to have consistency. And so then that's what I did. And I had also hoped that that might send the district a message, the school board rather, that, you know, a lot of money is going to get pulled out of the district if you guys can't make decisions to get our kids as normal a school year as possible. And the third, you know, my youngest, I did start homeschooling him, and then he wanted to try cyber school. So he did end up doing a half a year of cyber school that year of 2020.
And I remember over that summer when it became clear, you know, later in the summer that so many school districts didn't even open at all. The ones that did mitigated to the teeth. It just wound up going absolutely terribly for the poor kids. I remember it being a huge push of the group to say, okay, if you really, really, really want to fight back, send them to cyber charter because you're essentially still doing virtual, but you're sending them to a school that is custom built to do that. Like that's what they do. And that's the only version of sending a kid to school where you're removing your tax money from the district. The district has to pay for your kid's education then, as opposed to homeschooling, all of your taxes still go to the school district. Yep. So in the mindset we were in summer of 2020, it was like, okay, this is a little way to like fight back or whatever. But that makes me really curious to hear that it's what happened with you is you had to that point 9 years of experience homeschooling. You'd also experienced the virtual of spring of 2020. How does cyber charter compare there? You know, like,
well, with the homeschooling community, we're all really connected, and we also have cyber schoolers as part of it. Cyber schooling is different than homeschooling; it falls under a different law because cyber schooling is public schooling, just virtually. So they're technically not homeschoolers. But I reached out to my community, and I asked, and I said, "Please tell me the schools that your kids go to. What do you like? Pros, cons. You know, here are the ages of my kids." And so I never thought I would be a cyber schooler, but given the situation, I decided, and after doing like a virtual tour and of the school, I decided that this was going to be the best situation possible at this time. And my one son needed an IEP. He needed that specialized help. And I knew that the cyber school would be able to provide it. And I did not have the confidence that I was going to get that same help through Central Bucks, especially if my kid had to see a masked teacher and be masked himself. I did not agree with that. I think that should have been a choice. And my son has severe anxiety, so to not be able to see faces, there would be no way that he could function and progress, right? There's no way that his education was going to progress. He would have absolutely had learning loss. So it was a bit of a no-brainer for me at that point. I couldn't provide the things that he needed. And it ended up being a great decision. He really progressed well. We got the IEP that he needed. And I had a kid who went from barely being able to read to being on the honor roll during the year when other kids were losing learning. So that was great.
So you think overall you would say the format of, I don't know if you'll go as far as saying cyber charter in general, but certainly whichever one you sent your kids to, they did the job. They passed the test through very tough circumstances when pretty much it's widely accepted now that the public school students who were made to go home, that didn't really work out. And again, it's not the teacher's fault or anything. It's just the system's not, it wasn't built for that.
When you experience how cyber school is set up, it's just so very different. And they're not teaching to part, you know, a live classroom and also virtual. And they're
crazy.
Not. Yeah, it's just set up very differently so that and they've done it for so many years. They are always working out the kinks of what's not working. Now, I will say that it's not for everyone, because even though my older son did fine academically, he's an extrovert. And it was extremely difficult for him to not be around other kids. So for him, that cyber platform wasn't the best. I think it was better than what he would have experienced going to Central Bucks. I mean, he said, I cannot do that virtual learning with Central Bucks again. So he was pretty adamant about that. But that was one of the reasons that I started fighting really hard for my kids, because I wanted them to have options. If they wanted to be homeschooled, fine. If they wanted to go to public school, whatever, I feel like whatever's the best for them, I want them to be able to have.
Yeah, and kind of tailor it to each kid, right? You mentioned before, every kid kind of had their unique circumstances. So,
yes.
I mean, that takes us to kind of a wonderful part of the story. When the story finally turns around, you were a big part of this. You're in Central Bucks, and I mean, to my eyes, Central Bucks is, they've been the tip of the spear. Closely followed by Council Rock every step of the way, and then maybe like a distant third is Penridge, with everyone else way behind. But like, you are in the district that pushed and kind of changed the whole thing. It would have been, so this is last school year we're talking about, when you had enrolled them in cyber charter, kind of towards the spring when that sort of started to present itself finally, like Dr. Kopicki was pushed out and the board flipped and all this stuff started happening. When for you, I mean, I remember from the beginning of the school board, you know, battles and everything that was happening, that you were right there giving public comment, very involved. But when exactly did you decide, okay, I'm going to look at actually opening up this option for my kids and get, you know, you're now to the point where all of your kids are in Central Bucks. Is that right?
They are now. Yes. All three.
It's come a long way.
Yes, it has. And so, I would say what gave me hope was the vote at the end of the 2020 year, right? Or 2021, where are we at?
Yeah, 2021.
So June of, right? So when they finally, you know, Wolf's mandate goes away and...
Well, they voted on that while the indoor mandate was still in effect, which makes it extra badass. Like, they just went for it.
The original mandate, wasn't it done? Or am I wrong?
So this is in June of 2021. Yeah. 2021,
right.
They said, we're going to go mask optional. And Wolf's statewide indoor mask mandate, he had said, we're going to let it expire at the end of June.
That's correct. Yes. So we went beforehand. And that was, now I remember, because Dr. Damsker came to the meeting. So that vote gave me hope. And I thought, okay, we're going to have a chance to get back into school in the fall. And but I knew it was going to be a fight. Every school board meeting was like, what is it? Tooth and nail. You know, like I'm chewing on my nails, my stomach's in knots. I didn't know what was going to happen. You're hoping that the vote goes the way that you feel it should. There's a lot of strong feelings on both sides, mm-hmm. and I had hope. But I also knew I couldn't let up on the fight, and so I didn't. And I got involved with the local school board elections, and I helped candidates that I felt would give the really it's about the parental control and the choice choosing, right? I'm not telling anybody else to not mask your child. If they're your children, you can do what you like, but I really can't get over others trying to force a medical device that I don't believe works and that can have detrimental effects physiologically as well as mentally, socially, and all, you know, in all aspects. That being forced upon my child, that's not okay.
It's wild. Yeah. And every time this same thing comes up on the podcast, like trying to remember back, this isn't too long ago. This is literally like 6 or 9 months ago, but it was the other side, okay, our detractors, 110% were convinced the cloth masks like prevent the spread.
Yes,
in terms of my mask protects you, your mask mm-hmm. protects me. Well, now it's pretty much widely accepted that if you want to slow the spread, like wear an N95, do whatever right. you want to do for yourself, PPE. But nobody's talking about this like, oh, I wear it to protect you nonsense
right.
anymore.
Right.
But it was so rough. Like the way that belief just, it feels to me like it led people to a place where they were just cruel, really cruel about it, to not recognize,
really?
Look, all I want right now is the choice yep. to make my own decision for my kid. And
they were reacting out of fear. They were believing things that were not true. I come from a very scientific based background. Science is my background. Before I stayed home with my kids, you know, I worked in science. I was a scientist. So I don't approach things very emotionally. I look at the data. And so that's what I did. And I couldn't get over how, no matter how much I tried to present facts and data and logic, that they did not want to believe that. Yeah. And
well, you're not a doctor. You're not an epidemiologist. You're not a statistician.
Right? But even the doctors who were saying the same thing, oh, well, they're a quack doctor, regardless of their background.
They're kicked off Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just, ugh.
Yes.
And again, it's hard to relate back now because we've kind of won to a certain degree. Life is back to normal in a lot of ways. But, yo, that was crazy. That was crazy.
Yeah,
people
it
just
was.
Lost their mind.
And I will say, so what ended up happening, obviously, is that my oldest did go back to school starting, you know, in the fall. I kept my younger two home, and I was homeschooling them, like traditional, not cyber school,
okay.
just homeschooling.
So just out of curiosity mm-hmm. on that, what made you decide then over that summer to switch from the cyber charter back to the homeschooling?
Well, at that point, they both wanted to do homeschooling. And there were definitely certain aspects that for my youngest, he could progress much quicker academically as a homeschooler. Because it's basically, you know, you're sitting there educating your child. You move as quickly as they get the concept. And
yeah.
so, you know, cyber school was holding him back a little bit. And he could excel in math, and I wanted to give him that opportunity, and he wanted that opportunity. And I also didn't want the screens, to be honest. A whole year of the screens, I decided maybe it's not so good. My middle one was finally like at a place really great academically where I felt that I could meet his needs. I knew how to give him accommodations, and he wanted to try the homeschooling. And so I said, we'll do that. Fortunately, I have that flexibility. I work part-time, and, you know, we're able to make it work for our family, and I know not everybody can do that, but it was definitely a nail-biter right there at the end of August when, you know, I've got my oldest going back, he's in middle school, and I don't know what's going to happen with this newest Secretary of Health, you know, wolf mandate that came out in August. And fortunately, it worked out in to our advantage. But
Again, you were in the district that led the way.
Yes,
several districts
absolutely.
Would wind up doing what Central Bucks did, but Central Bucks did it first.
I cannot give thanks enough to the strong school board members who really went up against, you know, difficulty. A lot of people coming against them. It takes bravery. It takes bravery to not go with the crowd, right? I mean, and that's what we're talking about here. When that whole your mask protects me and my mask protects you, there's no science behind that. And that was something just people followed and people repeated. Nobody knew. It's the same thing with the 6 feet. That drove me nuts. Mm. I was one of the ones early on saying on Facebook that 6 feet it's meaningless, you know? And people were really upset that I would dare to say that. You know, that I was saying that misinformation, you know, but it turns out that it really wasn't misinformation. But I don't know what I would have done had it been that, what if my kid had to go to school in a mask? You know, I would like to say I would have pulled him out, because I believe so strongly that that would have harmed his health, both mentally and physically, that I would have pulled him out. But fortunately, that was not the case. And I kept on it. Every school board meeting, I think I may have only missed one of the main meetings, you know. And I tried to help others get elected, door knocking, distributing information, just helping to campaign.
Yeah. And then luckily that wound up being a very good part of the story too, is they did enough to secure, actually I think they improved their position on the board pretty solidly.
Yes.
So it's been even better since then. Now, is it safe to say then that this, you know, during the fall time leading up to election, you have your oldest who did go back because they had the mask exception forms, mm-hmm. and he was mm-hmm. able to do that. Were you looking at that as like, okay, we'll send the oldest, the two younger two are at home with me doing homeschooling. Is that kind of like he's the scout? You know, it's a little bit of running recon on where the school is at. And then once, you know, he reports back that the schools are better, then we'll look at the other two kids.
Well, not exactly, because I would say as you get into middle school and high school, it's very different than the elementary school. So what's happening in the middle school in terms of mask compliance is not really reflective of what would be happening in the elementary school.
True.
So, and I also didn't want to put my son in that position. I just wanted him to go to school, have a normal social life, do his classes, like be just normal, just a normal ninth grade year. And I feel like, is that too much to ask for? You know, let kids be kids. And, you know, I don't know how there are some children that are so afraid. They've developed almost like psychoses because they are so scared now. Well, that was done to them. That they didn't do that to themselves. I knew my son needed that, because that summer he got involved with a youth group, and it was the first normal experience after being shut down, locked away. I'm going back to 2020, summer of 2020. So when he experienced that normal, just the change in him for the better, it that was another reason I knew he had to have a normal school year. He just had to. So, yeah, I just kept fighting.
Yeah. Now, when it sounds like it must have been pretty recently, like this spring or so, that you put the other two in?
Right, yeah. So they started to express interest in trying it out. They themselves are very much aware, I would say more so than my middle schooler, of what they would want for their education in terms of masking and that sort of thing. They did not want to wear masks. They felt very upset. They didn't like seeing people in masks, because they could not... They felt they couldn't interact with people. They could not see their faces. They couldn't tell facial expressions. They couldn't tell, like, if somebody's upset with me or if they like me, or all those very, very important social cues that little kids really need as they're learning social skills. I have a second grader and a fifth grader, you know? So, you know, the kindergarten and the third grade at the time of what the start of the pandemic. So those things are really important. And, they just started to, as they saw people taking off the masks, and they were like, I think we're ready to try public school.
Mm.
And so I felt comfortable finally, after having the strong school board and seeing the leadership of Dr. Lukaba, that I felt that it was safe to put my kids into school.
So it's almost like you'd finally gotten back to where you were January of 2020, when you started to make that venture from so long of homeschooling to we're going to be comfortable, give them the option, they can go to school. And now finally in spring of 2022, you have that option again. And
yes.
That's what they choose.
And I would say actually even more so now than in January of 2020, because before that, I'd only ever been to one board meeting. And I had two stepchildren who graduated from the district. So I was familiar with the district in terms of academics and opportunities. But, you know, I didn't really know what the school board was like. So I would say now I'm even more confident that, you know, I just want the focus to be on educating my children to the best of their ability and to, you know, partnering with the parents. I don't want to feel shut out as a parent. And I don't think a school can run well if a parent is concerned and can't trust the administration or the teachers. Mm-hmm. And I have had a great experience with the middle school principals and teachers, and you know, it's only been a short month, but good experience with the elementary school. So this has been very rewarding and helpful, and I truly feel like the administrators and teachers that I have interacted with, they're professionals, they take their job seriously, they want to help the students, and they want to partner with parents because they recognize that students succeed when they have involved and caring parents as well as the school doing, you know, so that when there's that partnership, that's when you get the best out of the kids. When you have administrators or teachers trying to interfere with a parent-child relationship,
yeah, it never ends well.
Never ends well. That is just a recipe for disaster. And I'm very aware of, you know, what's happening with the profession of teaching, in which teachers are being told they need to become activists and to basically interfere with the values that parents want to raise their children with. And I don't think that teachers should be doing that, and I will fight against that.
Well, that's a very important point, I think, to make in your journey going from homeschooling to mm-hmm. now all your kids are in school, and that you're happy with that. It's working for your family. Mm-hmm. I think a big reason people are looking at homeschooling is because of all this, the other non-COVID nonsense right. that came into the picture during COVID. It kind of has come to a more pronounced fever pitch. How do you, is it just that you see what happened with the school board? It went in a more conservative direction. You mentioned Dr. Lukaba, who has been, I think, just...
He's been a rock star.
Head yeah. and shoulders above yeah. any other superintendent.
Absolutely.
Is it kind of like you trust the district basically enough to protect your kids or not make that kind of the central thing? Like what if you were in, mm-hmm. you know, Pensbury, for example, they are normal when it comes to COVID now.
No, I don't think I could put my kids into a district like Pensbury. No, absolutely not. There's too much activism going on there. Yes, but the word you brought up, trust. I never thought I would get to this point, but here we are. Yes, yeah. I trust them now. I know that if there's an issue that comes up, that I feel my voice will be heard. And that I don't need to go to the school board to complain if there's something. It's like I can talk to the teacher. If that doesn't work out, I can talk to the principal. There, you know, I feel that there are avenues that I can go through. And if that doesn't work, then finally there's the school board, there's Dr. Lukaba, you know, those directions that would be necessary. So I have that trust.
It's good.
Absolutely.
Very good. So kind of switching gears a little bit, but something I want to make sure we cover before the end is it's such a key part of, okay, this is not just a key part of like the homeschooling stories and, you know, this really it's I think a background of Reopen Bucks is the library mm-hmm. situation, Bucks County Free Library, and how I've referred to them before as like they're the ones that got away from me. Like we never really fairly gave them a shot to try to make that situation better. I imagine that you know, prior to when in January 2020 you decided to send your kids to public school, you use the library just like all other homeschoolers do, almost as like a primary resource, right?
100%. In fact, for homeschoolers, the library is like a second home. We are there a couple times a week. I'm getting a lot of resources from the library. Mm-hmm. And so when that was taken away, essentially, because I could not go there, I could not bring my children, we could not wear masks, so we were not able to go there when it finally reopened. It wasn't just books and things like that, but it was also social skills, because we would meet other homeschoolers there, or we would just meet other children and other families. And, you know, they had the play area that got taken away.
Oh my gosh.
And it took a long time for it to come back. And it's back now, you know, and, and I've taken my kids a couple times, but they are forever changed. They don't want to go to the library like they used to. They used to love to go to the library. This was a request. And when they finally removed the mask mandate, my children were so afraid of getting yelled at, or that I was going to get yelled at. They witnessed me being harassed for not wearing a mask many times, unfortunately. Well, I wouldn't say many, but definitely a handful of times. And it was enough. It makes it feel like when you're harassed like that in a grocery store because you need to breathe, that's a horrifying experience for a very young child, you know, to see their mother being called names.
It always, it's pissed me off so much that in terms of the like harassment out in public about masks, almost always was a man, a masked man, harassing an unmasked woman, a lot of times with kids. How does that I don't, oh God, that'll piss me off just to think about
it. Yeah, I know. I don't know if we want to get on that.
It affects, I mean, the library was supposed to be like the safe place that your kids love to go. I mean, that, and I recall that too. We had a three-year-old, our oldest was three at the time. That was exactly what that felt like. And then it's gone.
Those story times were so important. And the all of the activities, the summer activities, the summer reading program, we did the science in the summer, with the GSK science in the summer. So I took advantage of pretty much every program that was appropriate, age appropriate for my kids at the library. And I got to know the librarians. You know, they know my family.
Yeah, it becomes a community thing, because each community has their own branch, and it's,
absolutely.
It's a really tough thing to lose for 2 years. I mean, they straight up took it away for 2 years. Basically, you could go in and get your books, but the story times, the different things, those were gone for straight up 2 years.
Exactly.
Which is tough to think about. So then pushing to get them back in place, you would become, I think, kind of a real central figure here in the last few months with everything you found out. Why don't you just, for the listeners, kind of describe how, again, this goes back to, for me, a little bit of like regret that we were never able to do this earlier. But I guess you just got to a point where you're like, all right, I'm done. It started with a right to know request, right?
Yes. Well, it was basically I had to focus on schools first, and the library was in the back of my mind. And I had been to a number of library board meetings years before, and this was when we had Republican commissioners. So after the election and finally this spring, I said, okay, I've got to see what's going on with the library board, because their mission is to make kids into readers, and they're sorely missing that mission. Like they're not meeting
that
laughable. At all. It's laughable, and they're bypassing it. That's not even what they're doing anymore. I kind of wondered, what are they doing?
Political activism.
Political activism. I would I would agree with that. So, anyway, I ended up attending a school board meeting, which was still virtual, which really was upsetting to me, because
and this is like a few months ago.
Yes, I think this was March, right?
Just so crazy.
Wow. Yeah, maybe it was February or March. And I had just put in a right to know, because I had seen a post by one of the board members. Who posted an email sent to the library board.
Oh, yep.
And I was really upset. Yes, I was really upset that a board member of the library would do that. That's just highly unprofessional. And it made me start to think, what is going on in that board? And so that's when I started to, I did a write to know to see more of those emails. And then I went to a meeting, and that meeting that I went to, being virtual, it was very poorly run. They were denying First Amendment rights with public comment. They were saying you could only make public comment if it was on the agenda. But then when you say, well, how do you get your issue on the agenda that you want to talk about? Well, you email us, and then we decide whether or not we want to put it on. We can say yes or no. So basically, you're at the whim of the library board, which does not follow the Sunshine Act. And this is a taxpayer funded, you know, board. So they have to follow the laws. Well, I first tried to let them know, hey, I just want to let you know you're not meeting the law. And then the lawyer, you know, that for them, the solicitor said, we are following the law and here's how we think we're following it. And knowing a bit about the law now, after, you know, spending a lot of time the past 2 years with the school boards, I pushed back and I said, you know what, I'm going to attend a webinar actually run by the Office of Open Records for Pennsylvania. And I asked them during the webinar if the library was allowed to do this. And they said, no, this is breaking Sunshine Law. So at that point, I said, okay, we got to take care of this. And I went as far as to speak about it at the commissioners meeting, because the commissioners, the Bucks County commissioners, are the ones who appoint the board members. And I wanted them to understand that you've appointed people that do not understand Sunshine Law, don't understand how to run a board meeting. They were not following Robert's rules. And they were appointing a new person to replace the one that I RTK'd, who decided to resign because he doesn't want his emails to get exposed. I'm saying that's what I think. I'm not saying that's fact.
Well, something I should throw out for everyone, yes, which adds to it. I think you found out when you write to Node that they essentially are using their own personal emails.
Oh, yes. That's a very important point.
Library business, which by right to know law, I hate to tell you people, but if you are a an appointed or elected official on a board like that, that is subject to taxpayer funds, the right to know law says once you incorporate your own personal, whatever it is, it could be text, email, that is all open. All sunshine needs to shine on that. So he ran away because he realized, oh, crap, I've got my personal email is at stake here and everything I've done for the library.
I agree with you. And that was an important point that I kind of forgot about. And yes, and all of them now are, you know, opened up to that. So, but I would say that the person they have appointed in place is not much better. And, you know, a number of us spoke about that at the board meetings. I think what was most disturbing is the whole point of the Sunshine Law is that our government is held accountable. They are elected by we the people. And the Sunshine Law gives that accountability. So the Office of Open Records really encourages the government to be transparent. Do not hide things from the people who have elected you. It's just not going to go well for you. But they consistently are trying to hide things, is what I'm getting.
Crazy.
And it's the library, the commissioners, you know, school boards. Because I think if we're honest, most of us were leading our busy lives, doing our thing. And I mean, I voted, but I really didn't get involved in these things. I had years before attended library meetings because they were getting rid of books that I didn't want them to get rid of. Silly things like not having a proper changing table. And for a mom with two kids in diapers, that's, you know, like, could you just give me a changing table? But I didn't know about Sunshine Law. I didn't know about any of this, you know, right to know. And I think it's a good law. I think people should take advantage of it. I know there's some criticism about the amount of money that it takes. But honestly, if our government's transparent and willing to be conducting business with ethics and honesty and integrity, then what do they have to fear?
It's seems like a pretty straightforward question to me, and it's so relevant to COVID, because this was a common thing on school boards before you took it to the library. How many of them just wanted to hide? And that makes no sense to me. Like, transparent government is good government. It feels to me like you could almost tell who's the good guy and who's not the good guy based on who's willing to be transparent. And this isn't to say, like, I've obviously made a ton of mistakes. Here we are on a podcast talking. You just put it out there. Don't be so afraid of it. But with the library, your right to know request made people run away into the shadows. I find that interesting.
I think the difference between, like, you, when you've made mistakes, you've publicly apologized. You know what I mean? You admit your mistakes, you know?
Sometimes.
And I think that's what's important, is that when you have, everybody's going to make mistakes, but it's the hiding and lying and trying to blame shift and, you know, blame it on somebody else. We've seen that, you know, so much with, like, the situation with Megan Brock, with Jamie Walker. I mean, that's disturbing. Man up, you know, woman up, and apologize and do better. Pledge to do better. You know, I mean, it is unfortunately very political. Who you elect affects so much. And I never realized until COVID how, like, the commissioner's election, how much it trickles down through all of Bucks County. And I think in any political situation, you know, you can have a lot of these politicians that we elect, they're all friends, you know? Mm-hmm. So we, the people, need to let them know, look, we get that you all need to get along, but you still are to fight for us, for your constituents. So if that sometimes means you need to bristle or you need to like go against a political opponent or friend, you know, whatever you want to consider them, you need to do that. You know, you need to stand, and I've seen politicians do this. There's some good ones out there. Obviously, Russ Diamond comes to mind. He's been a big freedom fighter. But we need more folks like that, you know, willing to stand up and say.
I feel like there's a lot more coming now because of this wave. This is a post-COVID reality driven by COVID. Yes. You have people just like yourselves who never really paid too much attention. Now, they're door knocking. This is not just like, oh, I'm really motivated to vote. It's I'm making phone calls and trying to figure out how I can help. That's a whole other level. And then behind that, you have another thing you've done, which is so central to this story, which is people are shining spotlights that never were there before. If you are a government agency, you need to follow the law.
Absolutely.
And that'll, I feel like, never go away because people are now carrying this memory of like, look, at the end of the day, all this nonsense that happened for 2 years, it was against the law. Here in Bucks,
absolutely,
it was against the law. So
yes,
more sunshine, more transparency. I think if you're someone out there, especially on the Democrat side, looking to get more involved, you better be ready to have a light shown on you in pretty much everything you do, because that's just going to be a new post-COVID reality, I think.
Absolutely. And I don't think I can ever stop now, right? I don't think I can ever go back to the way I was previously.
It's a little sad.
It is. Well, it's because so much energy is spent doing this. But when you look at the reasons why, because my children need to have normalcy so that I know they can develop into good citizens. Like, isn't that what every parent wants their kids to? You want to raise them well. And I don't, that's not going to happen in a society that's run by fear and dishonesty. When I think right now about the generation coming up, I do have real serious concerns and worries. And I look at my own two youngest and, you know, they'll go play with anybody. We go to the playground. If you like something they like, they'll play with you. And they don't care if the kid has a mask on or not. But if they're asked, and they have been, why aren't you wearing a mask? They'll tell them, I don't need to wear a mask. it doesn't do anything. It doesn't help. And I feel like as long as they hold on to truth, and I told them I won't lie to them and I won't try to manipulate them, I will always be honest with them, that gives me a little bit of hope. You know, because maybe it's the weird homeschoolers. You know, we were always referred to as weird, right? And most people like thought of homeschoolers as a little bit strange. If people are honest, right? And I think it's turning out that the homeschoolers were actually the ones leading the way for normal. Mm. Yeah, if we look at the whole COVID situation, we homeschoolers, we developed our own, like we met up, we found places to meet up. We did not wear masks. So, you know, it's kind of funny. We weren't breaking the law, but we were seeing like we were breaking the law. You know what I mean? Like people were like, oh my gosh, they're breaking the law. No, that's not a law. But
and it's such a stark contrast to the public schools were unfortunately the most mitigated areas on the planet for some reason.
Absolutely.
But when you compare, you know, what the homeschool kids experienced to what the public school kids experienced, it is pretty stark difference.
Absolutely.
Well, here we are at the end. So you've come to the point where all of your kids are into public school. Mm-hmm. You're looking ahead with a very, very strong board and a strong administration. Do you expect to just continue on with public school indefinitely?
Right now, all three of my kids want to continue with public school. So that's our plan.
Awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, I always say, like, people ask me when I was homeschooling, well, how long are you going to homeschool? I don't know. This is minute by minute, honestly, day by day.
That's a really good point for folks is you shouldn't think of these things as like long-term commitments. Mm-hmm. You can float back and forth, like things change, totally common.
Absolutely. We'll make decisions. You know, my husband and I will make decisions on what we think's best for our children. We factor in our children's thoughts as well. It doesn't mean that they make the decisions, but because obviously as parents, we're going to use our collective wisdom to make good decisions for them. But so, but at this point, we feel confident that this is the right place for them, and they do too. So we're going to continue with that, and I'm going to continue supporting our board and speaking at board meetings and doing what I think is the right thing for me to do, including being involved in the next board election.
Yeah. You, that's a wonderful place to end it. You alluded to earlier, there was one particular way you put it that I loved, which is you just want to give your kids options, because every kid, you never know what they're going to need, where they need to go. So the more options, the better. This option of public school in Central Bucks has been restored, and it required a lot of fight. So that's not going to change. We got to keep fighting for it.
Yep. Well, we know that those who oppose what we desire are feeling the same way, just in the opposite direction. Mm. So they're preparing for a fight. And I will say this just as an ending. I use the word fight, but I don't like to think of it that way. I really don't like conflict. I try to get along with everyone. And I am always willing to have conversations, absolutely with anybody who wants to converse respectfully with me. If you have a difference of opinion, I am always happy to have a conversation. What I won't tolerate is attacks and division and lying, and where it's become toxic. That's what I won't tolerate. And I will absolutely continue to fight against that.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. Thanks for being so involved, being a part of Reopen Bucks, coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Catch up with you later.
Take care.